what lurks in the hearts of men. The Colonel knows.
Oh, sure, another comedian sneaks in here and tries to disrupt a serious science news radio program. You know, we share the building with a number of different studios, and down the hall is our auditions for Comedy Central. And they sneak in here once in a while and like to rib us a little bit about things. Well, welcome back to the second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. The first half hour, if you were listening, you heard Erin Coughlin de Perez. She's the manager of the climate science team at the Red Cross Red Crescent Climate Center and an adjunct associate research scientist at Columbia University. She's going to be the plenary speaker at the IEEE Homeland Disaster Relief Conference and Security Technologies Conference going on the 23rd and 24th of October in Boston. And you can hear more about that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set. Rummage around in the coins just a minute here for today's quiz.
To the fountain of useless information. How can I help?
Oh, yes, ladies and gentlemen, there he is. We have awakened the spirit of the fountain, who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. This is why we had to throw in the coins. All right, well, spirit of the fountain, what island nation needs the fossa? That's a little-known carnivore to keep its lemur population down, huh? What island nation needs the fossa to keep its lemur population down?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell me.
Yes. The spirit of the fountain knows all, hears all, and sees all, and you probably do too. You bet you guessed it, didn't you? The island nation that needs the fossa, that little-known carnivore, to keep its lemur population down? If you said Madagascar, of course, Madagascar, right there in the Indian Ocean. All right, back to our program. The sweet sounds of the Science News Studio Band right here on the Science News Radio Network. We're going to get back to our conversation with Erin Coughlin de Perez in just a minute. If you were listening in the first half hour, you learned that Erin Coughlin de Perez is manager of the climate science team at the Red Cross and the Red Crescent. She's going to be a plenary speaker at the Homeland Security Humanitarian Technology Relief Conference is going on in Boston, coming up pretty soon. Let's see, when is that going to be? Let me look at this here. 23rd, 24th of October at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Boston. And if you want to know more about that, go to our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link. And right behind the interview with Erin Coughlin de Perez, we're going to meet Tasim Sharma. She likes to be known as Tas. She's a scientist at the University of North Texas Health Science Center, and her passion lies in the scientific exploration of neuroregeneration. She's a fascinating subject. She's going to be speaking at the Metricon Conference, which is an IEEE-produced conference, too. It's going to be going on November 7 in Hearst, Texas, at the Hearst Convention Center, and you can find out more about that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, of course, you'll see a link. Anyway, at the end of the interview, in the first half hour, Erin says that I asked her a really tough question. And I said, if you think that's a tough question, I've got another one for you. So, Here we go. Let's resume the interview with Aaron Coughlin de Perez, manager of the climate science team at the Red Cross Red Crescent.
You've been mentored in your life and your growth and that sort of thing, and you're at the point now where you're mentoring other people. Do you have a creed of living, a words to live by, something that you could pass on to a younger person succinctly, and how to, you know, how to work your career or how to be a better person, that sort of thing?
A lot of, yeah, I have to say, I would probably encourage people to put themselves in a place where they can see that they will shine. So I think there's often advice that is given to people to, you know, pick something very difficult and push really hard or whatever. But I think if you can see your own strengths and put yourself in a position where you can see my strengths are going to really shine here. I'm going to be, you know, giving something and doing something that is really tapping on a quality that I have. Maybe other people don't have this quality. I'm really, I'm very eloquent, or I just love arranging, you know, making things straight and neat and clean, and, you know, and dealing with backlog or whatever, you know, whatever you really love and that technique that can get you to shine compared to other people, I think would be, I think that, you know, just really helps set people up to be their best selves and to contribute so much to society. So I guess that would be my suggestion. And then when you get into that kind of place, you know, don't be afraid to take risks. Have ideas, put yourself out there, and push the boundaries a little bit.
All right. I see you've given a lot of thought to this. Dr. Aaron Coughlin de Perez, manager of the climate science team at the Red Cross Red Crescent, and going to be one of two plenary speakers, along with Dr. Pablo Suarez, at the Homeland Security Disaster Relief Conference that's going on in Boston, the 23rd, 24th of October. And we'll look forward to seeing you there. And thank you so much for being with us today on the Science News Radio Network.
Thanks for having me.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. All right, right at the moment, I want to introduce you to Tashneem Sharma. She likes to be called Tass. And she's a scientist at the University of North Texas Health Science Center. Her passion is the scientific exploration of neuroregeneration. And you can imagine how exciting that would be. Studies including, you know, the relief of glaucoma, traumatic brain injury, and an interesting thing of microgravity-associated visual impairment for NASA. We want to get into that just a little bit. Also is an expert on CRISPR, the base genome editing technology, of which we've studied here in this program on several occasions, and we're going to ask you more about that. So welcome to the program, Tass.
Hi, how are you?
Well, it's so wonderful to have you, and you're going to be speaking at the Metricon Conference. It's going on November 7th at the Hearst Convention Center in Texas, about halfway between Dallas and Fort Worth. And we're very, very proud to have you on the program. You're going to be giving an interesting talk, which is a little bit above my head. Novel ex vivo transliminar autonomous systems to study the effects of interocular and intracranial pressure differential on the central nervous system neurons. So let's bring that down from maybe 10,000 feet down to the street level and kind of explain to our listeners what your study's about.
Yeah, so this new model system that we have designed actually is studies the effects of intraocular pressure and intracranial pressure. So in a lot of diseases that we look at, which is like traumatic brain injury, even glaucoma, as well as microgravity-associated visual impairment, what we see is that there is a pressure differential that is going on at the base of the eye, which is at the optic nerve head, as we call it, so where the eyeball is connecting to the optic nerve that goes all the way to the brain. So that region is very, very sensitive to any kinds of mechanical insults. So So if you see or talk about astronauts in space, they have high pressure around that nerve, and because of that it causes a swelling of the nerve, and that causes visual impairment. While in cases like glaucoma, that pressure is low, and because of that it could cause a bowing effect at that nerve, and that causes visual impairment. And our model system actually allows us to use human donor eyes that we can put within this system and then independently regulate the pressure within the eye and the pressure around the optic nerve, which is outside the eye, and study changes at that region.
So specific stem cells, derived neurons in this model system, allows the precision medicine testing. And when you remove this pressure or alter the pressure in some manner of fact, you help with the glaucoma or the traumatic brain injury for visual. And that also has to do with visual impairment from space. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. Because if we can regulate these pressure changes that are going on around the eye, because there's a huge difference in pressure when you're in space and when you're back on Earth, so this would give us the opportunity to basically modulate the intracranial pressure, which is the pressure that's surrounding that nerve that could be modulated.
So you will... you'll be able to monitor the pressure and analyze the pressure, and that's all important. But then you get into CRISPR-based genome editing technology, that is the changing of the actual DNA in order to affect a change in the particular ocular. Is that how that fits into?
Yes, so one of the other goals of this whole project, of course, the long-term goal, is that not only can we take human donor eyes that we are getting from donors, but we could actually take this human donor eye and remove all the cells that are previously associated with an individual, and then use real-life patient skin cells, transform them into stem cells and then neurons, and then basically feed this human donor eye with a patient's cells and then study pressure changes. So that's one part of it. The other part is that there's a lot of genetics involved with normal tension glaucoma, primary open angle glaucoma. So we could, there are specific genes like myosin that can regulate pressure or high tension glaucoma pressure, and so we could go in and correct these genes using the CRISPR technology and then transplant them and see if there is pressure differences, or in normal tension glaucoma patients where there is no intraocular pressure but there is still disease, how do we change the genetics and still have a normal functioning eye that is not affected by any of these pressure changes.
Now, how long have you been working on these procedures? Has this been a major portion of your study in your adult life?
Yes, I have been actually, as my PhD, with Dr. Clark up here, Dr. Abbott F. Clark here at North Texas Eye Research Institute, I did my PhD studies with neuroprotection and in glaucoma, and then I went to University of Iowa where my postdoctoral studies were basically in stem cells and CRISPR and different kinds of eye-related diseases, retinitis pigmentosa, glaucoma. And that's where I've gained kind of my knowledge on CRISPR and stem cells, and now I've brought it back to the Institute here. And that's when we started developing this model and trying to basically have a system that we could study that is more than intraocular pressure.
Has to be a fascinating study, and recently then the mapping of the human genome, and now we're involved with all the things that we can do from the genome editing and CRISPR coming along. Incidentally, for the audience that don't know, it's a capital C, capital R, capital I, capital S
capital P, capital R, pronounced CRISPR, but it all stands for a big, long name, and that we just call it CRISPR. So, yes, I can imagine that now, then, with the mapping of the human genome, and along comes CRISPR, it opens all sorts of different things to happen. Can you tell us, sound like they're going to be cures, I guess, and can you give us an indication about when great strides are going to be made? I understand you're already making some great strides. When are they going to be applicable to people medically?
So, of course, as all sciences, that there's a lot of testing and then preclinical testing and clinical testing of all this. But this gives us at least a starting point. Not only that, like if we have current therapeutics that are out in the market, which is glaucoma therapeutics or any kind of other therapies that are involved with CSF or central spinal fluid pressure lowering. Therapies, we can just put it in our model system because our human donor eyes can survive in these model systems for almost 2 to 3 weeks, and then so we can bait them with whatever therapies we want. And because we have two different chambers, one is the inside of the eye chamber, one is the outside of the eye chamber, so we can use two different drugs, therapies, test this and see where it is going. So even though we are in the initial testing phases, but this could be something that can be taken quite far.
Wow. Fascinating. Now then, I wanted to ask you about your work with NASA. Kelly spent a year up there, and he got back, and of course he couldn't walk, and it was his joints and his bones and his muscles and everything had all kind of gotten used to zero gravity. But I've heard nothing about visual impairment. When was it first noticed that that in zero gravity or light gravity that there's visual impairment? Could you fill us in on some of that?
So yes, visual impairment has been extensively kind of studied for astronauts, because when astronauts do come back from space, there is a lot increased evidence of swelling in the eye. They cannot see, and studies were done initially to see what was wrong. Visual function test. IOP related changes, but very recently even Dr. Berdahl has done a lot of extensive studies where he's looked at different kind of astronauts and patients and seen that cerebral spinal fluid pressure or intracranial pressure is significantly higher sometimes in astronauts, but also that in glaucoma patients, it's lower. So when we're talking about visual impairment or intracranial pressure changes within the astronauts, and they're having the swelling at the optic nerve, it causes kinking, it causes, of that optic nerve, it causes this swelling within the disc of the optic nerve, which is the region between the back of the eye and the optic nerve, and that causes blurry vision. All sorts of visual impairment related consequences.
I can imagine this is an incredibly important study. I mean, we're talking about sending astronauts on long voyages to Mars and long periods in space. It would be regrettable they arrive at Mars and they're blind or have a lot of difficulty, especially when there wouldn't be any way up there to treat it. So is this something that you're working to kind of preempt any eye condition problems before we send humans into long space?
Yes, so just now our model system, we just filed a provisional patent for it, so we are trying to commercialize this in the near future, hopefully. But, that is our goal, is that if we can study, because this would not, one of the most important parts about testing ICP or intracranial pressure is through a spinal tap, and that is a pretty invasive procedure. So we can actually take just a human donor eye and study just changes ex vivo or basically outside the human system. So that kind of reduces some of the invasive techniques that are currently seen or observed or utilized to study these changes.
So ex vivo is outside the human body, and you're doing this with donor eyes, and that's how you're able to accomplish the things that you're accomplishing. Now, let me ask you, when you give your talk at the Metricon conference on November 7th at the Hearst Convention Center, what's going to be the takeaway? What do you want your audience to learn and to come away with at that talk?
What I would like to see is that what potential our model system actually holds, where we can take it, and if you know, commercialization is something that is doable in the near future, that what kind of therapies or targeting that we can do. Not only that, we can utilize patient-specific cells so that we can do individualized treatments or therapies that are working in certain patients and not working in other patients. We can do that all outside the human body, ex vivo. In addition, our system is a sealed chamber system. So if we needed to take this, you know, outside in space or other areas where we can do microgravity-associated experiments, then we would be able to do that without initially testing it in humans directly.
Wow. Well, it's going to be a fascinating talk. We're going to really look forward to seeing you and hearing the things you have to say there. We'll enjoy meeting you firsthand. And I wonder, Taz, you know, you've I'm sure you've been mentored during the course of your life, maybe as a little girl, I don't know, but certainly as growing up and things, and you probably have an opportunity to mentor other people right at the moment. Do you have a word of wisdom for us, maybe words to live by, some sort of creed that we can pass on to the listeners, some word of wisdom that somebody gave you that really stuck with you during the course of your maturing into the scientist that you are now?
Well, one of the things my dad always actually says is that, you know, science is all about just being at it. It's about persistence. It's about exploration. It's about just sticking with it, you know. Sometimes there are really bad days, sometimes really good days, but it's always remembering the highs over the lows.
Okay. Okay, Tasnim Sharma, currently a scientist at the University of North Texas Health Science Center, scientific exploration of neuroregeneration and the CRISPR-based genome editing technology, and working with NASA on associated visual impairment and glaucoma, traumatic brain injury. We've been so fascinated to have you with us, and we're looking forward to seeing you and meeting you and hearing what you have to say at the Metricon conference on November 7th. Thanks so much for being with us.
Yes, I am really privileged to have this conversation, and I would like to give my special thanks to also my current, you know, mentor, who's Dr. McDowell, who, you know, she's kind of been the driving force for this technology and helping me with all of this stuff right now.
Well, you're so good. Thank you so much. We really appreciate having you.
Yes. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Not just the technologies and the science that get developed to help keep our nation secure, but it's also the business of technology, because technologies can be developed, but if they don't, if there's no business plan and business model to get those technologies in the hands of the end users, unfortunately, it's science for science's sake. Andrea Marsh, and I am the business development manager for Battelle, focusing on homeland security and critical infrastructure security program.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
You live tomorrow, 'cause you know it will be there. I am waiting for you. We'll be right back.